Hello and welcome to a kind of an experimental thing, kind of a standalone episode of The Hearing, where we're not going to be reviewing an album, but we're going to be talking about something in music related. At the end of last week, because I follow a lot of millennials on Twitter, when Taylor Swift dropped her latest album, I heard a lot about it.
Well, yeah, I try to ignore it though.
She dropped it kind of out of nowhere. A lot of people were talking about it being a departure. And I checked out a few songs.
Don't they say that about every album she puts out, though?
It is a step back to her country roots.
1989 was a departure. Yeah. The one where she plays goth princess Barbie a departure.
I checked out a few songs. I was impressed that she wrote one entirely on her own. The big deal is it was recorded in quarantine and released, as a surprise. Anyway, as I was looking through the liner notes, I kind of, shuddered when I saw that she co-wrote everything with the producer. Incidentally, same producer as Mass Seduction, Jack Arnoff, I think his name is.
Oh, yeah?
Everything is a session player. And I started to wonder about pop music, because I'm not a fan. And I almost have an aversion to it, because of how everything has like 50 songwriters.
Yeah.
And I did a little checking on the history of pop music and was found out something kind of fascinating. Because I knew it went back to like Sinatra and Bennett in that era. In fact, I've often referred to Sinatra as the first pop star. Turns out that era is called traditional pop.
Yeah.
It goes back quite a bit further. I did a bit of digging. It actually goes back to the early 1900s in musical theater.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely.
It was one of those things I never connected, but it made perfect sense.
The theater I worked at had a horrendous, horrendous show. It was from the guys that did Jersey Boys, actually. Mm-hmm. It was their follow-up to it. And it was called Turn of the Century. And the premise was that these two hack songwriters got transported back to 1900, and they decided to write, quote unquote, write the songs of the 20th century and release them out of context. And of course, they were hits, regardless of not having context.
Okay.
It was horrendous.
Yeah. But there are two well-known traditions in music. The folk tradition, folk, country, bluegrass, blues, jazz, rock. It's music of the people. And then there's the formal tradition, classical, quote-unquote classical music, orchestral music, the formal tradition.
Right, so symphony hall, the living room.
And they both have their different value.
Yeah.
Folk tradition values authenticity. Formal tradition values skill.
Well, folk is, it's how people entertain themselves for the most part,
And then the point is to say your truth. Be yourself, speak your truth.
Yeah. Pre-radio, what else were you going to do?
Right. Formal music, it's about skill. It's learn your craft, impress, be impressive. Pop, which I now realize has a tradition, it's about entertainment.
And as far as pop for me, I mean, it depends on the genre, on the era, I think,
There are some eras that are better than others.
Yeah.
But when you were shocked that I loved the Annika album, even though it was very much a pop album, it's because I live in the folk tradition, at least in terms of music. So I value authenticity. And in that case, it was written, recorded, and produced by the band, recorded in their home studio. It was authentic. So I put the tradition ahead of even this genre of music.
And, I mean, there are plenty of pop artists that, they did have their own control of it, but...
Right. And there's power pop, which I like, and that's very much... that's authentic.
But you had the Tin Pan Alley sort of,
Well, that's the thing. In pop, it isn't about the songwriter or even the artist, speaking their truth. It's about putting on a show.
It's a package.
It's entertainment. It's do what's entertaining. It makes perfect sense that it comes from musical theater, which isn't about the creator. It's not about the the artist, the performer being themselves. It's about the character and entertainment value. Back a couple albums ago, when bandmates started writing their own songs on their first full-length album, Just Bring It, there were a lot of us who were very relieved about this. In fact, somebody, could have been me, said, they're finally a real band. And there was this other contingent of people who said, what does it matter who writes the songs as long as they're good? And in bandmates' case, it's kind of a perfect split because, they're just as pop as they are rock. So you get, fans who are in both traditions. And it was this dichotomy. And at the time, I didn't know how to answer that. Why do I value who writes the songs? And I realized it's because of these different traditions. And, I'm squarely in the folk tradition. These people who are saying, who cares who writes the songs, are squarely in the pop tradition.
Well, I mean, and I'm not that particular about who writes the song versus whether it's the artist or they do somebody else's song. I think it's more of, is that song right for the artist? Is it a good fit? Is it a role that artist can play? Because, that's really how I always see a song is, an acting role.
So you actually lean a little bit toward the pop tradition in that sense.
If they can, of course, if they're writing it for themselves, that's going to be the best fit possible. A lot of the times when they're writing it for themselves, they're writing in another character anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
They're very rarely speaking of themselves, which, usually when they do, it's kind of weird.
That's you segued to something I didn't know if I was going to bring up, which is interesting. Because when it comes to music, I'm almost folk to a fault. Speaking of Band-Aid, I rarely listen to the stuff they didn't write. Even though I loved it at the time, I don't really listen to the mini albums anymore. I stick to the stuff written by the band, with a couple of exceptions. With music, I am folk to a fault. As a poet, JHM_poetry on Instagram, just for a cheap plug, I lean much more formal. I'm very technical as a poet. And a lot of times, they aren't about me.
Right. Oh, of course.
I try to make them emotive, and I'm very big on death of the author. It shouldn't be about what I intended. It should be about, what the reader brings to it and how they apply it to their own experience. But it's kind of, that's just kind of an interesting dichotomy. And there I'm formal. Music, I'm fully into folk. I don't really think about the pop tradition. I don't think about entertainment. I think this might be why I never got anywhere as a creative. At least part of it. Thinking about entertainment to me was always kind of dirty. It should be about speaking your truth and doing what you want to do. And, if you can be impressive, that's kind of cool. Show a lot of skill. But
I think I've always thought of it as a byproduct, which, not the end result.
Well, if something happens to be entertaining, that's great.
Right. I've always felt like, I'm not going to be able to tell what everybody else likes, so I'm just going to do what I like, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And hope that people come along for the ride, too.
Right. But, I never thought about trying to be entertaining. And, I watch a lot of YouTube, and people who are very, very successful on that platform have talked about, putting thought into, what is popular and what people will like. And I've heard other people in other mediums say the same. And it always kind of makes my skin crawl a little.
Yeah, because, with Zombie Takeout, starting that early on, we had a lot of people say, hey, why don't you do this, movie or that movie? And a lot of them were just, mainstream movies that had been talked about to death already. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, but that's not the point of this. The point is that we're away from executives telling us what we need to do and what we need to talk about, and just go where no one else has gone before.
And a lot of people have said, because of the name, we should just do horror. I thought of that name because it sounded like a B movie, and everything else I thought about for a B movie podcast was Taken. Zombie Takeout wasn't. That's the only reason we call it that.
We couldn't. I mean, Uncle John's B movie picks just didn't roll off the.
It wasn't just about me then. That was the segment on the Tuesday afternoon show, our previous podcast that Zombie Takeout spawned from.
Right.
But this realization about the pop tradition and making it about entertainment gave me a whole new spin on that. Because making something entertaining isn't necessarily a cash grab.
It's not an easy thing to do either. It
takes skill. But it's really about, you know, giving people something to enjoy. It's not just the soulless, cynical cash grab that I've always characterized it as.
The problem is, by the time we're seeing it, usually it is just a soulless cash grab.
In most mainstream cases, yes. But, you know, something could appear authentic and still be a cynical, soulless cash grab. That just, not only did I not realize 35 years as a musician, not realize that there was this third tradition in music that I knew nothing about, and knew nothing about where it went back to. I mean, obviously, musical theater spawned from, opera, and probably something on the folk side, minstrel shows and that sort of thing.
If you think about it, it's kind of a combination of opera and folk, you know, this whole... And classical, where they're just, you know, showboat, you know, things like that.
They pull a lot from you know, classical music and from pop and from folk music. Classical pulls from folk all the time. In the documentary about Punch Brothers we did last week, Chris Thiele talked about merging folk and formal. Yeah. He was not the first to do that. He may be the first in bluegrass, but Zappa did that. He was really more on the formal side himself.
Well, right, that was the whole point of progressive rock in the early 70s.
It's a mix of folk and formal. Jazz, in a lot of ways, is a mix of folk and formal.
And if you think about it, pop really came, you know, from ragtime and jazz, which, you know, jazz...
Well, a lot of jazz was a big influence because jazz was the popular music of the day.
Right.
Up until the 50s, jazz was the thing. Jazz was popular music. Jazz was, you know, the big music of the day. Rock and roll came along and killed it. Or maybe the R&B.
You get more like the swing, you know, and, you know.
R&B and country got big and other styles came along and killed it. But not killed it. And, you know, we're not going to get into the... Genres don't die. They just become less popular.
True. Yeah, there's always somebody out there that will still listen to something.
Rock is not going to die. It may never return to the pop charts.
Yeah.
It's not going to die.
Well, yeah, I've always said it's kind of more of a museum piece at this point, you know?
Who knows what's going to happen? It may not. I'm perfectly fine if it doesn't. I like obscure music, but it's just... back to the subject at hand, and I think this is going to be a standalone thing. It just amazed me that there's the whole tradition that I never realized was a thing, and it's given me almost a respect for pop music. Because I get the point of it now. You know?
I'd say there's providing different points at different times.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. I mean, yes, it's a cash grab. But anything mainstream is a cash grab. Greg Graffin had a great quote in EC Rocker, if anybody, you know, in this area of the country remembers that.
Oh, man.
That. They were interviewing him off the back of, I want to say it was Stranger Than Fiction or Recipe for Hate. And he said, if you want to keep your music pure, stay in the garage. You know, so anything that the record companies have their hand in is a cash grab on some level. But, you know, on the rock side, at least the artists write it and it is an attempt to be authentic. It starts there. I just never thought that pop had almost, a virtue to it. You want to entertain the audience. You want to give them a good time.
You want to win them over, as they said in the documentary.
it was just very eye-opening.
I mean, are record companies even that influential these days anymore?
I mean, they're dinosaurs.
Yeah.
They've been dinosaurs for a while.
I don't even really know who, who the main influence is really anymore. Like, it feels like the music industry is in chaos.
Well, that was the beautiful
even
thing about...
before, even pre-COVID, you know?
Well, that was the beautiful thing about the internet. And I mean, I'm not going to... I've done my share, but I'm not going to talk... I'm not going to talk up file sharing. But what it did is it democratized everything. It made it so the artist could go direct to the fans now. You know, and you have things like anybody can put their music on Spotify or iTunes. You have Bandcamp, which is exclusively independent artists. You don't need a record company.
I just hope they can make a living at it, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have that. That was the other down. That was the bad thing about, one of the bad things about file sharing, is it removed the ability to make a living off of record sales.
Yeah.
You have to make your living off of live now.
And now we don't have a live.
Or find other ways, which a lot of online artists have found other ways of other side hustles.
They just announced a Lollapalooza this year is like a virtual.
Oh, that's like interesting.
It's going to be free for the next 4 days starting tomorrow with like. I was kind of wondering why they didn't get some sets from the 90s in there, but they've got some going back a good 10, 15 years, I think.
Okay, so it's all archival stuff.
Most of it is, I think. I think
I
there's some
to check that
new
out.
Things.
There was a German festival a while ago I found out about that was all online, too, during the quarantine. Really interesting stuff. Anyway, that's it for this little digression. This is going to be a standalone thing because it went on for like 20, 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, talk to you next week.
Thanks.